Tongestalten, Tongestalten. Tongestalten-Podcast. Mit André Klar und Detlef Alaski.
Welcome to the Tongestalten-Podcast from VDT, the German Association of Sound Engineers. My name is André Klar, and normally you listen to this podcast in German and with my colleague Detlef Alaski. But today we present you a special episode in English and with Ralf Kessler and his guest Joshua Reis on the topic Artificial Intelligence in Audio. What can we expect in the future? Have fun listening.
So, hello Josh. Thanks in advance for answering my questions in the next half hour.
You're welcome.
The topic is artificial intelligence in audio technology, opportunities and risks. And
okay.
Our readers and listeners are audio technicians, sound engineers and tonmeisters who are wondering, are their jobs at risk? They are triggered by recent ChatGPT, as you know, in the German press, it is very popular currently, this ChatGPT discussions. Even the policy is having an opinion and they preparing councils, ethical councils to answer the question. But first, maybe you tell a little bit about your own position, because you are a pioneer in intelligent sound engineering. That's actually the name of your YouTube channel. And maybe you present our listeners a little bit your point of this thing.
Sure. So a bit of background about me. I am a professor of audio engineering at Queen Mary University of London. And recently, well, last year, 2022, I was president of the Audio Engineering Society. I founded or co-founded the company Lander close to a decade ago now. And Lander provides an intelligent music mastering service. So based on machine learning technologies created in my research group. And since then, I've also co-founded WaveShaper AI, which applies deep learning for, audio processing solutions, real-time audio processing based on deep learning, and Nemasindo, which provides procedural generation of sound effects, and most recently co-founded Roex, that has an AI-powered music mixing service. So yeah, I've been involved in this quite a while. My research group, the focus is not machine learning. The focus is solving challenging audio engineering problems and finding ways to make the process of audio production easier. But very often that does involve machine learning. That's right.
So actually, if I can interrupt, actually your purpose of all your work is helping engineers, not replacing them, right?
Oh, absolutely. But if I can maybe answer your first question, are the jobs of sound engineers at risk? I would say yes, definitely. But that doesn't mean that there will be less jobs. And I think we can look at this historically. What happened when different technologies came around to automate aspects of audio production? So from dynamic range compression, removing the need for engineers to essentially ride the faders all day long during recording, or auto-tune to make singing correction much easier. With both of those technologies, they did automate things. They changed the way people needed to work. It meant that people needed to be retrained, but the amount of jobs did not decrease, it actually increased. Those sorts of technologies paved the way for more creative uses. You might like them or dislike them, but there was actually more work and has continually been more work for sound engineers over time. So I think historically, it's always been a combination of automation and repurposing of technologies for more creative use. As automation has come around, it's made it easier for people to get involved in sound engineering, which meant that there's also more room for creativity. So it will be a challenge. I think people will need to be retrained. Jobs are at risk, but that does not mean there will be less. It means people need to adapt and there will be more opportunities.
Yeah, that's what I thought also when I thought on the second time over the problem. I'm a part-time mastering engineer by myself. First I thought, oh my God, now the prices will drop, the salary for 1 hour, the hourly rates for mastering services will drop. But if you look with a second thought on it, I think services like Lander actually open the whole mastering business to a new market. So,
yeah, it is a tricky one. I was surprised by how quickly Lander took off. You know, once it made a name for itself, it quickly became a dominant player in mastering. I am sure that there were people who would have had their content professionally mixed manually by a talented, professionally mastered by a talented mastering engineer who chose to go with Lander. But at the same time, it meant much more content was mastered, demo tapes, practice sessions, small recordings, one-off content, all this content that ordinarily would not have had as much production now had it. So overall, the amount of content being mastered grew, and probably grew more than the replacement of professionals with the service. But that's only part of it, because for technologies like Lander to arrive, you need audio programmers, people who are expert at audio listening tests, audio researchers, you need mastering engineers who work with the companies developing these technologies. So all of those jobs might be less than the amount of manual mastering engineers, but it's all part of the puzzle. So what does one need to stay in business? I think you need to be aware of the changes in technologies and be able to stay one step ahead of the game. If ChatGPT is going to allow for new means of saying, you know, make me a good mix, make me a mix that sounds like it's by this engineer, or make my band sound like that band, you need to be one of the first to use those technologies and use them effectively, better than others, and be able to do something truly creative with that technology.
So your next step is not only give the mastering engineer a challenge, but also give the music production engineer, the sound engineer on the board, a challenge, right? Is that the next logical step for you?
Yeah. So you can, to an extent, draw a line between the technical challenges in sound engineering at all levels and the more creative challenges. There are aspects such as prevention of comb filtering that almost always one would consider a technical challenge. Comb filtering being unwanted, adjust the delays to align the sources in time. And it's a big jump from trying to come up with AI-based solutions for the technical challenges to trying to come up with AI-based solutions for the creative challenges.
Yeah, of course. Selection of reverb, stuff like that.
Yeah. Now, I would say a lot of the work from the whole production team is dealing with technical challenges. And when we have very little understanding of a technical challenge, it's rather creative in how we deal with it. But there's also things that people do which are much more inherently creative. And it requires intuition and artistic skill, not just because we don't understand it, but because we're trying to appeal to emotion or preference, or things that are harder to articulate. So maybe one day, and maybe it's not that far away, we will be having AI solutions that are dealing with the very creative aspects of audio production. But I don't think that human creativity is going to be replaced. It will be transformed. We will always be looking for ways in order to express ourselves as engineers and as artists.
Yeah, of course, any creative person can use these tools, these new tools, and let the robot make a proposal. And it's still the human who decides which proposals to take. And the human also can make some new rules. Once I thought, oh, maybe I can use Lander if Lander helps me to match my style of one certain genre, how I master by myself this particular artist. For this particular genre, I'm sure if you give us mastering engineers the power to learn these networks with our own style, that could be also a next step, that the tool is actually helping the professionals.
Yeah. I think it's also important to note that because the sound engineering has so many creative and technical aspects, that there's a second ethical question. Not just are we replacing jobs, but how are we affecting sound quality? So one might argue that with all of the automatic solutions to things like mastering, we might end up with all the content sounding a bit the same or slightly inferior quality.
Yeah.
And this, it's not so much an inherent thing about automation. It's about us. It's about the people who create the systems for automation to ensure that they also maintain quality.
Exactly. And but therefore we need an organization who gives the rules for the quality. Who says what is the quality? The quality of the database, the quality of the data, what data are used to learn the neural nets? And is in your opinion, is that a thing what the AS should do or the government to make rules, ethical rules for tool designers?
I think organizations like AES, it's important that they always educate about this.
Yeah.
So I'd be hesitant to say one should dictate or even set a policy that is a strong recommendation that people should conform to it. But there are ways to ensure quality. There are guidelines for listening tests. There are subjective preference testing. There are some objective measures of quality in audio. There are ways to ensure that the knowledge of the professionals gets handed down not just to the next generation, but to the audio programmers, the machine learning researchers. And so a big part of it is education and training. And that's where the organizations can be heavily involved.
But then we have to adapt pretty fast because the development of the KI is fast. And I fear that the development of the educational programs are not fast enough.
Yes, yeah, I agree. And we also have a problem because you will sometimes get AI and machine learning research groups who are very good, but unaware of many of the audio aspects. So they might assume, well, a bit of natural language processing and having a large amount of data, and we'll get a solution.
That's
and you
it.
Do get a solution.
Yeah.
But if you don't understand the data, if the data isn't carefully balanced, carefully curated, or high quality data, then you will get a bad solution. If all of your data is slightly wrong, then building a deep learning system around that data will inherently head towards that slightly wrong solution as well.
Exactly. So this is a big problem, how to make that transparent. If I as a sound engineer buy a new tool, it has a KI in it, how can I know What is the quality of the data inside? What are the rules? So I fear a little bit that judging the quality of a KI product is more complicated than regular equipment. Judging regular equipment.
Hard to say. How we usually judge quality of signal processing based equipment, I think those same rules can be applied to a lot of AI solutions. So focus groups, listening tests, where one does things like tries to remove bias in the testing, ensures trained subjects, careful selection of stimuli, because in both cases you are evaluating the end result. But I do think you're right. What is probably quite challenging is if you identify an issue with the quality or the user experience with the deep learning systems, it's even harder to tell what was the cause of that, because the system very often operates like a black box. Somewhere inside, it does magic, and out comes the processed audio. At least with the signal processing system, maybe not a lot of people understand it, but hopefully a few people somewhere understand what it did in the middle. Hmm. But with the machine learning and deep learning, so multi-layer neural networks especially, the people who develop those systems very often don't even understand what they did. Yeah. So it is something that the community and the organization supporting the community can in part address. I think funded research can help us develop awareness of neural networks, be able to probe inside the network to gain an understanding of what it does. That's something that machine learning researchers in general can pursue. And I don't see any harm with organizations making suggestions, recommendations. Maybe they can't fully enforce them, but recommendations of good practice or things that people developing the systems should be aware of. So this is something that we can get involved in, definitely.
Yeah. So is it necessary for our educational systems to include, at least in the areas where AI is educated in organizations, to include a new science ethics thing? You know what I mean? That we teach engineers ethics.
I think it would be useful. I myself am often a skeptic, in the sense that whenever someone says, and people do say this, we need more training on entrepreneurship, or training on ethics, or training on fundamental acoustics, and everyone has their favorite thing. And I don't disagree. We need all those things, but what are you going to take out? So if you want to add something more to the educational curriculum, there's only so many hours in the day, the curriculum's always full, so what do you remove? Okay, so how does one deal with that, given the constraints? Sometimes there are areas of education that fall out of flavor. Maybe they're just no longer quite so relevant. But usually there is some aspect of training in any course related to things like professional standards or legal aspects. Sometimes there's already some ethical aspects. So there are usually places for this in a curriculum.
Yeah. But how fast can you include those changes?
I think what I would like to see is regular training and retraining for the practicing sound engineers, at least as long as there's opportunities, so that once a year, a week or two, they can get trained on emerging technologies, the things that are just entering the industry. If we know it's entering the industry, then there stands a very good chance that the year after that, it will become entrenched. And so we really want to make sure that all the practicing sound engineers out there have the opportunity to become experts on the new technologies.
Yeah. And of course, we need tools which can be shaped, that they are helpful tools for our engineers. and not replacement tools. So actually we also need to change the mind of the business people who try to, you know what I mean, to make profit.
Yeah, and if we succeed in doing this, I think most of the stakeholders would benefit.
Yeah, exactly.
So the sound engineers, obviously, who want to keep their jobs and want to be using the latest and greatest tools, the developers want to ensure that what they develop is high quality. The business people, if they know that what they develop is high quality, then there's less risk involved. The technology is more sustainable over time. And ultimately, this should all lead towards higher quality, better content.
Yeah.
And that's what I think we all want. You know, yeah. That's what the whole industry is about.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your vision about automatic mixing. And let's look at the situation in a German public broadcast station, where a radio station, they produce a big band, for instance, and the regular way to produce big bands is not with one engineer behind the desk. In earlier times, they had an operator, an engineer, and a Tonmeister, who is musically educated, and he's not allowed to touch the faders. He's behind the engineer and reads the partitura and can concentrate fully on the... That was the situation decades, in at least in Germany, and I think in the UK you have similar ways of working with a producer and an engineer. Do you foresee a situation that the broadcaster, they have to save money in Germany, and that they replace really the engineer and the Tonmeister is allowed to touch not the faders but the KI tool? AI, yeah. Sorry, I always say KI, it's German, künstliche Intelligenz, AI.
There's some interesting questions there, and I don't think I should try to touch on the structured aspects of the roles of the different positions. I'm not expert, and I'm bound to put my foot in my mouth if I did. But I would expect that... positions are bound to change. Even without AI, there becomes a need for content to be created in different ways. The emergence of VR content, the expectation more non-linear content, the way in which live sound is being performed, the emergence of podcasts, all these things change production and change production time and time again. And there were roles that didn't exist 20 years ago and are now in some ways considered almost essential. So there is going to be some fluidity, and I would expect that aspects of the process, maybe a portion of each role, but different portions of each role, might be performed by AI systems. Now, those systems would be monitored, and very often they might be assistive. How do you like this mix? We notice there's a lot of masking going on in the mix. So you have a meter that, you know, suddenly is a red light for, the mix is starting to sound muddy, mm-hmm. or this source has been masked by another. There's a distortion. There's a resonant frequency going on.
Yeah, great.
Those things could be great. Mm-hmm. And the sound engineer that's getting all of that information, but still deciding what to do with all of that information, that could be a really interesting way to work. The other effect it will have, and I feel fairly confident about this, is that even in big productions, there is still a demand for more content being produced in more ways than it can often be done by a small team. So at gigs, at concerts, many of the people would buy a recording of that concert if it had been produced and ready to be delivered to them instantaneously at the end of the show.
Which was done. It was done, actually.
Yeah, and right, these things are emerging. Sometimes that is done fully manually. There's also startup companies that are trying to do elements of that. But it's not a universal thing. There's also situations, the band playing in the pub, the small venue, the restaurant. Very often there is no no sound person there. They just need to bring a small little controller with them and hope the setup 5 minutes in a noisy venue is sufficient.
Right.
So then you have the band practicing in the garage.
Yeah, that's also an example of generating a new market for our art.
Yeah. Yes, it is. So these are all situations where if it was possible, they would benefit from a live sound engineer or even a small team, but that's completely impractical. And so intelligent systems could help fill that gap, or at least give support to filling that gap. Mm. And that's just the tip of it. Games consoles, they don't have a miniature gremlin sound engineer inside the console mixing all of the assets as it gets delivered. But games often have a huge number of sources that potentially could be delivered at any time. So some intelligent mixing system inside the game engine would be beneficial.
Of course.
Teleconference situations as well.
Do you have any data how many chart hits are mastered by Lander?
Good question. I heard not that long ago that Lander now masters more content than all of the professional mastering houses together combined.
Wow.
I don't know if that is true, but it's certainly on that scale, on that order of magnitude.
Because a lot of hobby musicians and hobby producers are using the service, of course.
That's it. Also, it's a lot of work with back catalogs.
Yeah.
So you'll have a production house that has tens of thousands of tracks just sitting there waiting for some production on them.
But and the label cannot afford remastering by a human.
And so this is the type of thing that you want sort of an assembly line, a factory for doing. And they want good masters, but given the volume of the content, they're looking for good, but not incredibly high quality.
Mm, yeah.
So it wouldn't have gone out to professionals. It would have just sat there waiting.
Yeah, this I see as a risk of the technology, that we the quality in the end, you mentioned it before, that the quality in the end will decrease by overusing AI?
Well, the potential benefit of AI is if done right, you can maintain a level of quality, but still do it with a vast amount of content.
Mm.
But I have seen situations where they've overlooked the quality simply to show off what they can do or to bring a product to market. This is not something specific to audio. It comes out, it's part of business.
Yeah.
Their goal is gaining market share, making revenue, and quality of the product is often second to that.
Okay.
But to the sound engineers, quality is vitally important and for good reason. And it's something we need to be aware of. It's always a risk.
Yeah, I hope that keeps. Great. Thank you for sharing your ideas with us, Josh. And I think we reached the end of our time. And
thank you very much, Ralph. This was a pleasure.
Yeah, it was a pleasure for me as well. So thank you and good luck with all your projects.
Yeah, thanks again.